This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You know, being somebody who could do anything and everything he wanted, it never used to be a problem. Or at least I like to think so. It was only until when the pandemic hit that I think challenges were thrown in many areas of my life, which is the personal life. Of course, you know, with marriage and having my son at the toughest time to grow them up. And of course, my career life. And finally, my personal finance. I was thrown in a problem that I knew for the first time I couldn't solve by myself. And it was a downhill situation back then, before I said I needed help.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, Xiao Yik. This is Because Feelings Matter, a series featuring personal stories of people and their mental health issues. Through their stories, we hope to normalize conversations about mental health and to hear how people found support for their struggles. Christopher Tok is a name you associate with multiple accolades in the entrepreneur space right here in Malaysia. Prestige Top 40 Under 40, Top 10 Entrepreneur on Top 10 Malaysia, 100 Most Inspirational LinkedIn Icons of 2020, just among the string of accolades attached to his name. Now, we expect entrepreneurs to be risk-takers, goal-getters, to be energetic, passionate, creative. But we don't talk enough about the emotional and psychological struggles that they go through. We don't hear the words insecure, fear, failure. We don't hear someone say, I can't do it, because, frankly, that's anathema to a successful entrepreneur. On this episode, Chris shares about the crises that hit his personal and professional life during the pandemic, how he struggled mentally and emotionally, and how it forced him to accept some difficult truths about the way he's been dealing with adversity.
My name is Christopher Tok, and I am the founder of Social Grooves, a boutique digital agency. Now, with the merging of my partner's company as well, we have now running a company called Digitally Asia, which is a digital transformation agency. So, yes, you can tell that I'm a fully digital native. My entire being is all about helping people to understand why technology exists, how does it help people do better things in terms of their life, in terms of their career, and eventually saving them time so that they can spend their time doing things that are really, really meaningful. I'm 38 years old this year, and I'm married. I have a lovely son that was born during COVID times, and I live in PJ. This is basically where I live and breathe.
Chris describes himself as a digital marketeer and digital transformation specialist. He's founded, co-founded, and been involved in more than five ventures, ranging from a variety of social enterprises to digital startups. As an entrepreneur, he pushes himself hard, and failure was never an option for him.
I don't put myself in situations where I would fail. And when I say that, I mean in a very complex way. I mean, I often explain about this in a term of bridges. Like, I see 10 bridges in front of me, and they're all made of different materials, and some are broken, some are not broken. And I would do anything to prepare myself to fix all these bridges, to reduce the amount of failure, or rather to increase the chance of success rate, before I would even make that first move. And that way, I know that, wow, at any point of time, there is multiple bridges that I can choose from, and, made of different materials, and it would drastically reduce the amount of failures. So after what I've been through and learning about mental health and what's wrong with me, I realized that this is all, my way of trying to tell myself to say no or don't involve myself in things that I would not be good at, and really just dive deep into things that I'm really good at. And that became a big issue much later.
To understand where that drive comes from, we go back to Chris's upbringing.
So I've got only one word to explain my childhood. The word is blessings. Growing up in a Christian family, I've been always supported by, my mum, in the sense of like she will basically do anything that she needs to do if I wanted something. And when I say want something, I don't mean like playing games and things like that. It's something that's growth related, learning a new skill or just basically, I love a lot of interest, and you know, she makes it happen. And I didn't realize, of course, what it means to do that, you know, until I have my own kid, of course. And my father, being my father, he's an entrepreneur. He's a go-getter, you know, always thinks that there are a lot of things that can be done, and she dreams really, really big, and maybe, you know, a bit too big for his shoes, but that's the kind of life that I was brought up in. And combination of these two in my life gave me a lot of allowance for learning. And I think that's really one of the biggest lessons I've learned from my dad, actually. You know, he allowed me to spoil stuff. And later on, instead of, you know, scolding me, she would just sit down with me and fix things together. And I think that is a lesson that no school can teach. And I believe that even gave me this epiphany or awareness. It's like at 14, I said, hey, I think I know what I want to do in my life. Yeah, that's my bringing up expectations. The fact that I had a lot of talent allowed me to think that I can do a lot of things. And the fact that I had my mother and my father both, you know, who are, you know, can see that I would love to try new things and allowed me to do so with little repercussions, right? Little repercussions, meaning to say that there is scolding, there is, you know, the tendency to, hey, you know, you can do better. But having that flexibility and also that my innate talent of wanting to do more, I guess, put me into a position where I feel like if I can dream it, I can do it.
Did your parents have certain expectations of what you had to achieve? And was that why you pushed yourself?
You know, last time you asked me this question, I would say yes, of course, right? I mean, Asian parents, being Asian parents, we are expected to do more. But I think a lot lies on myself. I don't want to disappoint. I don't want to say no. I don't want to be seen as a failure. To give you an example, I knew that to get me any job that I want, I needed to go for a science stream. You know, back then when it was science stream versus art stream. And because of this, I didn't care what I liked or didn't like. I just knew I need to take science stream. And that was it. I just took the best classes. And I didn't understand the concept of like or dislike when it comes to subjects even. In fact, I believe that that's what made me be able to score my straight A's. You know, when other people were complaining, oh, I hate my subject. I was thinking, why do you hate or love it? Well, if you make it happen and you learn it, and then you can get your A's, and that's it. You game the system. So really, the understanding of gaming the system came very, very early on. So it's early on, I guess, you know, really by grace of God or by my father and mother thinking, you know, I managed to be that kind of person. But that being said, then I subject myself to not being able to fail. So I think it's the start of things that I only do things that I know I can win. And I avoid things that would not make me look good.
But as children, we do fall down. We get into scrapes, we make mistakes. That's how we learn.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, right, like my father, you know, would be the type that say, it's okay, son, you know, just get up. You know, look at that, you know, that can fall down and get up, no problem. So I had the kind of like exposure. And yet, at the same time, also my mom, I didn't really speak about my mom, right? So she's a banker for about 38 years, one of the longest outstanding employee in Maybank, you know, so that gives you a bit of a character of who she is and, you know, what she does. And she's in the line of private banking, which means that she gets people's trust. And I guess relationship was all there is. And the one I learned from her is empathy and also the idea of trust. I combined this with what I had. And that's why I feel that my personality, you know, being able to consult people and for them to be able to trust me and with my father's entrepreneurship, you know, being able to think out of the box, being able to outsource, that same weapon that I currently use now also became my biggest problem or challenge. Like, if people trust me, am I playing God? And that is a real thing I often think to myself. I handle a lot of crisis management issues, especially on digital. And, you know, why am I good at it? Right, I'm good at it because I can put myself in people's shoes. When my clients are frustrated, or when people involved are frustrated, they often come from a personal point of view. I can see myself from a third person. How would I act if I was like far away? You know, and I don't know. I border between like almost like, you know, playing God like that, and that's when a lot of things happen.
Nevertheless, these are Chris's personality traits that enabled him to have a successful and diverse career with a LinkedIn profile that reads like an overachiever's dream come true.
The word again is blessing, right? I was blessed enough that I had this kind of mindset that I could get whatever I want, whether it's the grades or by relationship with people. I just knew how to make a father think that I'm the best son that he could ever have, or a best friend that you could ever have. It just came very easily to me. So, you know, that takes me to places, right? I make friends with celebrities. I'm able to get trust from corporate sponsors to believe in my I project, which is the social enterprise that I created, because I felt that a lot of people's talents are wasted because they couldn't do what I do. And if I was to think what would be the biggest difference that I had that others didn't, it would be exposure to know that in Malaysia, especially, you know, when you study, you can only study one thing or two things. And everything else would be a taboo, you know, by parents. So how do I change the mindset? Then I tell them, hey, people your age that can do your things are doing so much better outside than because they are not confined by beliefs, systems and fear, right? I wanted Malaysia to be a better Malaysia, you know, not in terms of politics, but it's in terms of our abilities, you know, what we can do. And that charted my whole life from, you know, firstly joining investment bank for 2 years. And I started my first company called iProject. It was good. I got whatever I wanted. I raised money. It was all good. But of course, back then, I didn't know what went wrong, right? Like the term in gaming is called carry. I was a great carrier. I could carry anything. You know, where if the company was not doing well, I carried it. It was just such a great feeling that I couldn't be stopped, you know? And fast forward later, many accounts, you know, we actually work with Alibaba. You know, I mean, imagine like a boutique agency like us, a guy like me, you know, with no digital marketing background or you know, I took joint mathematics and computer science in Imperial College, London. So, you know, in fact, when I started my company, and people like to say, oh, when people can't study well, you know, they start their own entrepreneurship, or, you know, they cannot get a good job, then they start their entrepreneurship. I defied that. So it was all a game, lah. It was all a game to me. And it was fun. It was exciting. Even the dating scene, you know, getting to know my wife, proposed to her, and knowing that she loves her family and very, very intimate, you know, a selected group of friends, knowing that she doesn't like the big funfair and all these things. And I remember, you know, inviting her parents to Bali and doing a proposal there. And it was exactly the way that she wanted. And it was an easy yes for me also. So, yeah, up to the life of, you know, having my kid, my son, Aiden, building my company to where it was back then. Not that I didn't even once talk about my failure in iProject. So I only see nice things. It's hard for me to see the negative things. And that's how I led my life until the pandemic.
So what happened?
So when the pandemic happened, I guess you could say that people started showing their true colours to me. And it's not their fault. It's just because the way I am. I was told that I don't listen well. But I feel that's not true. I've been a leader. I've been an accidental leader back then. And then when I become a purposeful leader, starting my own company and being a family man, you know, I thought I understood that I always like to listen. And that was my way of, you know, servant leadership. In fact, it was the term I always use. But then to be told by my wife and my business partner that, no, Chris, you actually don't like to listen. You don't want to listen to things that you don't like to hear. It was a starting of things that I never understood about myself. And that's when I realized that, and I thought people had my back. And it was the worst feeling when I realized that that was not true. That all this while, I was not getting the ROI that I was supposed to have. That actually all these things was nice things that people say to me so that I remain happy, so that I don't show my temper. And I realized then I was not doing actually very well at all. And it was not for a fateful decision that I met my new business partner, Lim Kek Kwang. And he told me, you know, Chris, you know, I am looking for a leader and I run a lot of companies and they're all successful and I need to expand. So would you join me? And to me, I was like, oh, I love my life. Why would I join you? But when the pandemic hit, and he showed me what he could do. He trusted me with numbers and he showed me, you know, that he was really real in us being together and, you know, building the business together. I signed the dotted line and then he started to go through everything in my business from the finances to how we operate. And he started to point things out that I missed out or I didn't see or I refused to acknowledge. And thanks to that, I didn't fall. I can clearly say right here that, you know, we would have fought like many others. you know, maybe not that desperately, we would have pivoted somehow, but I wouldn't have the life I have today where I'm able to provide for my family, for my baby who's growing up, to give her the education, the daycare that we want, and being able to travel and being having holidays. We would not have this life if not for that one, you know, moment of like, okay, you know what, I think there is something wrong and I need help. So yeah, that's when things changed for me, and the starting of there must be something wrong that I have to face, and which led me to talking to a very good buddy called David Lai, who is very much a growth person. If you heard of fixed mindset versus growth mindset, and he was taking a course on that, and he invited me to be part of it. And I remember telling him, you know, David, I have a problem in my personal life. I have a problem in my business. I have a problem in my finance. What can I do? And he says, Chris, do you think that you have a problem in fitness? I said, why? What does it do with my fitness? And back then I was 91 kg. You know, I was not healthy. And he said, yes, if those things are things that they have external forces playing a role, but your fitness is the only one thing that you had no other external forces and you can't even deal with that, what makes you think you can deal with the others? And I think that opening line blew me. You know, my mind was blown. I'm like, he's right. So a lot of things I actually wasn't in control. It was all a figment of my imagination because I had the talent, say, for example, to earn money. Or, you know, I had a special talent in a few things that then all the other things that I didn't want to do, I put it out to everyone else. I delegate. I used to think I'm a delegate expert, but now I know I'm an avoidance expert. So that was, the beginning of really understanding that I am not who I thought that I was, and there were parts of me that I never knew existed.
We come back to Chris's bridge metaphor. As he said, he wasn't actually in control. And what happens when there are external stressors beyond his control that cause these bridges to collapse?
So I believe for most people, this bridge concept doesn't even come to play in the sense that why think so much, you know, especially when things are beyond your control. So yeah, so as you talk about that, right, I realize that I every time feel that I'm in control, right? And what happens when the external things did not go to plan? Wow, I don't even have an answer for you. I feel like it's hard because I made a lot of effort to make sure. And these efforts can even come close to like talking to the right people at the right time, doing the right things to make sure that I get what I want. So what happens when it doesn't? Well, I guess I become not me. I become a monster that I don't not even aware of. And this has only been shared to me by my people closest to me, like my business partner and my best friend, David, and my wife, Lillian, you know? Like, I could just run away from people that weren't close to me back then. But now when I have no choice, because I'm married, I have a kid, I have a business partner for real now, because previously I was alone on my journey. So as they told me these things, I reacted very badly, very badly.
After the break, the fractures that happened in Chris's life when the pandemic hit and how that led to a journey of introspection and mental health therapy. This is Because Feelings Matter, a series featuring personal stories of people and their mental health issues. Stay tuned to Health and Living BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm Xiao Yik. You're listening to Because Feelings Matter, a series featuring personal stories of people and their mental health issues. The series began 10 months ago with the idea of normalizing conversations about mental health, that it's okay to say that you're not okay. Expressing vulnerability and struggles is not something that comes easily to most of us, being conditioned to always strive for perfection. In entrepreneurship, this disconnect is especially huge. Behind the facade of success and the glory of that big payoff, the cracks are often papered over. That's what Chris Tok, a successful digital and social entrepreneur, did for years until the fateful events of the pandemic.
I think three things mainly happened during the pandemic. First is that I had to close my company, iProject, and that was the first time I, in a way, admit to myself rather than the world that I failed. You know, I failed in reviving this company that I love to bits, the one that started everything for me. I failed to manage the people, my business partner, and my staff. to the point where even one of them told me that they didn't learn anything at all in the last 6 months when the iProject restarted. And that hurt me because I spent a lot of money and time on it. And you know, nobody could have expected COVID to strike. But it is what it is, right? It is what it is. And striking off a company is not easy. You have to write a lot of emails. You have to shut contracts. You have to face people saying, hey, you know, but you still owe me this money. And I said, oh, you know, we're not doing well. We have to strike the company off. It is the first fracture of whatever ego that I've created or pride that I've developed over the years. So, you know, the second fracture happened in my personal relationship. Having a baby in a pandemic when we can't send our kid for support and help, you know, to our parents, even though they live so nearby. So for my wife, who is a first-time mother, and me having to juggle between what's happening in my business and at home, it was a mess. It was a tornado, you know. And while I didn't regret anything, I always wished that my wife could do better. You know, it's like, can she do better? Because I'm trying to do better. But of course, it was a selfish wish. How can she expect me to do better when I think that I'm doing better, but actually I'm not even facing it hard on, right? So that was my second fracture. I thought my third fracture would be to see people that work with me having to go. I mean, I don't mind sharing this because I think it's 90% my fault anyway. As a leader, you can set goals or you don't set goals. And you can be very caring or you can be not caring at all. And all people can fall in the other three quadrants, not caring, didn't set goals. And then, of course, there's the too caring, but don't set goals. So that was where I belonged. I didn't push my people. And is it their fault then, you know, that they were not equipped for the moment? So it is my fault. And it was hard to recognize this. But the result is that I saw a lot of people that stuck with me leave. And these people were with me in my golden times. But of course, it's all fair. The process was done in a manner that was important to make sure the company still goes strong. Because if a company dies, everybody dies along with it. If entrepreneurs fails, a lot of people tend to fail. So, you know, that was really the first time I remember, okay, you know, entrepreneurs need to have self-love too. Because I've been giving. I never cared about my salary. I never cared about, you know, I just wanted to make sure that I want to change the industry, you know, the way I want to see it. So yeah, my third factor was really to see people leave. And I remember in the thick and thin of this, you know, in the company changing and my relationship with my wife and, you know, my newborn and all these things. I remember telling both these two key people, my business partner and my wife, and said, I need a break. And you know, imagine during the whole situation, you know, I need a break means they have to then hold the fort. And I took a 3-day trip to Terengganu when the borders just opened. And that 3 days is where I had time to actually not be involved, right? Not be inside and be outside and to look at all things and really see how grateful I should be. And I guess when I came back, that's when the healing process started.
Taking a break, stepping away, that's surely inconceivable, especially if you're at the peak or on your way up. But that's what self-care is. It's not about vacations or massages and expecting your problems to magically disappear when you come back. Self-care is about taking a break from your stressful environment and using that opportunity to look at your problems with a clearer mind and to chart out what you need to do next. Even with the break, there was no magical light bulb moment when it came to what decisions Chris made next.
Huh, I don't know about decisions, but I can tell you I cried. I guess in a way, to have to cry when nobody's seeing me, that alone, I think is an unspoken stigma, right? Like, men are supposed to be strong, men are supposed to be, you know, able to make decisions. You know, I don't actually see myself as those masculine men, you know? That you can like just make decisions and don't feel anything, or rather you feel, but you know that you take responsibility for it. I don't have that. I often call myself as a new age sensitive man, which of course I realized later it's an excuse. but yes, you know, as a new age sensitive man, you know, I want to hear everybody. I want to talk to everybody. I want to be friends with everybody. But during war times, you can't do that. You have to be a leader. You have to make certain decisions that could be good for both parties. You know, all I can think of is the people who have left, oh no, what will happen to them? I didn't think that if they're here, that it's going to continue being worse. Because again, you know, I never teach them, I never push them, I never groom them the way that, you know, I'm supposed to. And then now, wherever they're going to go to, they're going to find, you know, a better path for them. So same thing, right? Same thing for anything you do in life. I always think that I'm responsible. And if nobody does anything, then the world will die, you know, it will die. So this is like the whole revolve around me thing, right? The whole hero. And what I didn't tell you all is also that I used to read a lot of comics. And I was brought up with a lot of manga, you know, the whole Dragon Ball, Naruto. And I believe that the whole heroism thing had an impact lah, in, you know, what I want to do and how I do things. The only problem with that is that, yeah, lah, I only think of the good things. I didn't think of the bad things. And yeah, I just realized that a lot of part of me that I used to say I delegate out eventually became a big weakness. My friend even dared to say, it's because you didn't do all those things that, you know, you couldn't be the actual potential of who you can really be. It's because I avoided this, I ran away from this, I'd rather pay money than to do this, or I'd rather sacrifice something so that I don't do this. So I will do anything than to face challenges that I knew that I wouldn't win. So that's when I seek therapy, right? Because the other side of the path that I will take will be a very bad path, lah. You know, separation, for example, you know, whether it's business or life. So I didn't want to go through that. Or rather, actually, I did want to go through that, if I were to be honest. Thankfully, God played a big role. I can only say that. And the awakening happened when I faced my demons, when I had no choice. I remember thinking, hey, we need a marriage counsellor. And then something just hit me and said, hey, I think there's something wrong with me. So I went to see a personal counsellor. And even the marriage counsellor was international online, you know, because we haven't talked about the fear of going through all this. Right? But through that, I realised I needed a personal therapist. And that personal therapist helped me a lot. Helped me a lot to understand what I was going through, that there was a name for this thing that I was going through, and how I could work it out.
Chris's comment about the fear of going for therapy was an offhand one, but that fear is no small thing for a lot of people and can be a significant barrier holding people back from seeking support. But Chris found ways to hack that so that he could get therapy that he was comfortable with.
I remember thinking, what can I do? What can I do? Because I'm a guy that plans, I'm a guy that strategizes. There can't be anything that I can't do. And through that path, I remember finding an online solution called BetterHelp. And, you know, it was easy, it was online, and we could chat with somebody that could help us. So we started with that. And it was good to know that there were tools, there were mind tools, concepts or whatever you call it, you know, that could help us to process things. And I guess that's the starting of like, hey, there's actually a new world out there that would be able to assist, you know, me in my this current turmoil in my life, this crisis. And I guess it just happened all at the same time, you know, the speaking to my friend David, you know. And in between, I still remember that, hey, I think there's something wrong with me kind of like issues. And then I went to see this app. So I'm still like, you know, afraid of going to actual places. So a combination of this happened at the same time. And I'm a go-getter. So it's not a surprise if I tell you that, you know, if I do one thing, I do all at the same time. So I just like, you know, most people say focus on one thing at one time. I've never been that guy who can focus one thing at one time. I pride myself in doing it. We'll do a lot of things. So that's what I did. I had a confidant / mindset group, which also we call an accountability group, that helped me with personal. Like, I would have challenges elsewhere, you know, with my family, with my business, with my finances. But then I would have this group that basically says, like, hey, you're not alone. I also got all these problems. So accountability group matters, right? So I had this thing running. I had the marriage, like a therapist helping. And then I had my personal therapist helping at the same time, which, well, so I suppose, gave birth to the starting of multitude of transformation. You know, and I'm smiling when I'm saying this because I remember, like, wow, like, those were the best times of my life because I start to realize that there are terms that you call these things and there's a way to work it out. So that's when actually the first time I heard of the term called experiential avoidance. And what is experiential avoidance? It's basically, it's almost like if there's a fight or flight situation and it is something that you avoid, you would almost always avoid it. And to a degree that you, the expense of other things, you know, and when you do this, your mind is trained to be dark and negative and down and depressed because you know there are areas that you can't solve and you need other people's help and these other people's help came at a cost, you know, whatever the cost may be. And of course, then you find out more and more of the problem, the root issues, how did it derive? Why was there, for example, a fear of money to me, you know? Why was there a fear of being seen as incapable? Why was there a deep-seated embarrassment that for some people would not even be embarrassing at all? But to me, it would be such a huge thing. For example, cleaning the toilet. It's not that I was pampered. I knew how to take care of myself. But 2 years ago, if you asked me to clean the toilet, I would go ballistics. I said, you know, with the money I'm earning, I throw money at somebody to clean the toilet would be better than me spending the time in the toilet. And of course, back then, I never thought it was an issue when I say these kind of things. But later on, of course, with the right people around me, right, surrounding yourself with people who dare to tell you the truth, to tell you, you know, what's wrong, and so that you can improve on it. And then I said, Chris, there's something wrong. So, you know, like this whole thing all just put me on a trajectory of growth that I've never seen before. That not only the fitness thing was sorted, so I actually did exercise. I went for walks, and I realized that walks helped me to calm my mind down before I even know about this whole green light, red light thing concept, which is like to take a pause, right, before you say something wrong or you make a wrong decision, you know, in the heat of the moment, like you can just walk it off. So walking became my biggest obsession. And last time I would be saying, oh, I've got no time for this. I need to solve all these problems. But, you know, with that 10,000 steps every day and Sundays, longer walks, I was able to calm myself down. I was able to reflect. I was able to see problems. I mean, problems that I wouldn't want to settle or work on, and just figure out, why is this so? Why am I scared of cleaning the toilets? Why am I scared of people looking down on me if I shut a company down? Why would I be afraid of what people think of me when I have to let them go? Or what would my wife think of me if I have to say, you know, can we manage our finances? You know, I realized that there was a really deep-seated problem here, and I guess I can say that it comes from my upbringing, you know, my family, what I've been through when I was younger.
Are you still the person who needs to fix all the bridges before you can cross them? Do you think you've changed?
My straightforward answer to that is that no. I know that I still feel that part where I shouldn't be seeking help. And I remember that there is a issue where, you know, people call it God complex, you know? And then I tend to ask myself, is it wrong to have a God complex? I mean, isn't it what happened that got me to where I am today? So to ask me to remove all those things or to work on all these things is saying, well, whatever I'm doing is wrong or right? I mean, it's hard to change because, yes, you know, up until 2 years ago, I didn't get all this help. But even without that help, I did things. You know, I run a lot of communities. I've created quite a number of things. So full of myself, right? I'm well respected, I think. You know, I've got it all and without all those help. So to say, oh, all this while you're doing something wrong is very hard. It's very hard. So how do you peel the onion? How do you find out which is not the right thing and what is the right thing that sets me apart from the others? What if I remove, you know, all these things and then eventually, you know, I become a husk of what I am, and then suddenly I see things starting to fall, you know, one by one. So that will always, I feel, be the challenge to really let go and what people call the ego death. I don't know if you've heard this term before, but it's so interesting. Like people talk about, like, Chris, you know, I think you need to experience an ego death, you know, that one day when, you know, nobody knows you or nobody cares for you or nobody calls you up to find out, you know, to solve their problem. But to actually say, you know, Chris, a lot of things are wrong. Why don't you fix this, fix that, and finally you can be happy. I don't know how this progress will happen. I just know that today, you know, I'm still moving the needle. So that's a choice, the choice of still going on, still facing these difficult moments and feeling angry, but saying, oh, it is for the best. You know, same with my wife, you know, to say that, oh, be all this thing, less argument. No, argument still happens. It is our personality. It is things that, for example, we didn't clarify when we were married. I mean, we know that certain values are not going to be the same after, you know, after having a family. But what was the other way? The other way is not what we both want, especially now we have a kid, right? So we have to work it out. I think it's going to be a continuous journey. And okay, so I talk about experiential avoidance. Have I got out of it? I don't think so. Just like flexing your muscles, right? You go to gym to exercise and to build muscles. I think it's the same for the mind. I have to continue working on it. I have to continue being aware of it, you know, being able to talk about it. And it'll be a constant struggle, but / reward, right? Because the better relationship I have with my friends, my family, my business partner, everything will go well. And this is what I truly believe. So I've shifted a little bit from 2 years ago to now. I actually moved from like me trying to read more books and seeing more therapists, to making the life of the people closest to me better. So what I do now, once in a week, I might just drop a note to some of these people and say, what can I do to make your day better? Or what can I do to myself that will create a better relationship between us? And I know I'm not going to hear something I like. Right? Like, for example, I have 3 people asking me to stop social media. Stop scrolling social media. Or stop using social media. And I'm like, are you crazy? That's my business, right? I won't like it, right, what they say. But yet, you know, those are valid reasons. I know it's associated with doom scrolling. I mean, you know the term of doom scrolling. Scrolling, negative news, and you can't help it but to listen to it. And I'm like, oh, you know, the world is so bad. So this is, I believe that the more I try to make it happen, the more I'm probably able to outgrow win the battle with this enemy.
What's the attitude among entrepreneurs when it comes to talking about mental health? Is there a stigma?
100% agree that there is a stigma. I mean, 2 years ago, again, you know, when I shared on LinkedIn, I still remember the story. I failed, right? I failed, you know, iProject has to be striked off. I remember a media picking up, that story and wanted to interview me. And I was that, I think, the first series of talking about problems that people faced during COVID. And as I shared, I thought, you know, hey, you know, there's a lot of people like me, right? I said, no, a lot of people, yes, they go through you, but they wouldn't dare to share the way that you do. And I realized that, yeah, I mean, if I did it wrongly, if I said something wrong or just said, you know, I'm just lucky that I'm also a PR person. You know, I'm able to say the right things, right time. I think I'm very honest, but I'm cautiously honest. How many people can be like that? And it's dangerous. It's dangerous to say the wrong things at the wrong time. So it's not easy, I feel, for anyone to come out and not being judged for it. Because people judge, you know. And the worst is when people have nothing to do with you and they judge even more, you know. And we see this often happening all the time. So I feel that it has a stigma, but for a reason. And until we come to the time where the community is more healthy or did in spaces that are more forgiving or having a safe space. So I feel we should have more. We should have more entrepreneurs coming out to share problems, to share people, tell people that they're not alone. Because I remember the message that I wanted to share is that entrepreneurs should have more self-love. You know, they should really take care of themselves more. I used to think my mother said, you know, charity starts from home. And I don't like that saying because there's so much problems outside in the world that need solving. And that's why I'm an entrepreneur, right? Because you solve other people's problems, right? But now, on insights, charity does start from home. We have to make sure that, for example, we take care of our own profits. And it's not wrong. You know, people talk about profits like it's a bad thing. If so much so that I think that, you know, if I make too much profits, then my staff is going to think, oh, you know, only take care of himself and not other people. But today, if I don't make the profits, how am I going to make sure that 1-2 years of COVID that I can still afford to pay you? These are actual real life situations that I had to go through and I couldn't. And that's why I fell to depression, you know. So it's just really changing the mindset and understanding that we need to speak up as entrepreneurs, maybe even so that, you know, our staff and people around us can understand better about why we do the things that we did.
It's one thing to talk about mental health in abstract, but quite another to be candid about your own issues and problems and to bear yourself in a way that could leave you open to criticisms. I asked Chris why he wanted to share his story.
I guess prior to this, topics like this aren't even talked about. You know, to imagine mass media covering stories like this, who want to? I mean, I'm in the media line and I know for a fact that people like to hear dramas, scandals, stories, they can talk to their friends. Hey, do you know this? Do you know that? It's just the human nature that talks about things that, you know, especially when it's not about them, right? It's such a prolific attitude that we tend to allow to happen and we make it a norm. And I don't like that. And part of the reason why I even became an entrepreneur is to change this industry. It's to hope that, you know, there are more positive stories that can be spinned out, that inspires people, that shares responsibility of, you know, what your words mean, you know, especially online, you know, when you start saying things about somebody else. So when I hear that there's a lot more attention being given to problems, that we can actually share it out, and it's not to the detriment of the media, you know. I mean, I felt if I don't contribute to this content, then who else? So I feel like I can't run away from this. I feel like if anyone hearing this can find support and solace, that even as a someone who apparently leads a normal life, but actually do have some personal issues that haven't been solved, can now feel that it is okay. It is okay that to have such things, and it is okay to have those challenges. In fact, those challenges are what helped me to uncover these problems that I can now solve so that I don't bring this to my family. I mean, this is a real situation. If I don't solve this, it will be brought to my future business partners, future children, my wife at a later age. It is going to be a reflection of what I used to feel or experience on and why I'm like this. So all I'm saying is that we should love ourselves more. We should take care of ourselves, because we need to know that there are a lot more people depending on us. And how do you do that? You need to build resilience. And how do you build resilience? You know, seek help.
In that arc of the hero's journey, the victorious character overcomes immense trials, both within and without, and finally achieves atonement and redeems himself. Chris talks about what redemption means to him.
So I remember telling my wife, in fact, I said, you know, dear, I need you to understand that, you know, I know that by marrying you, I won't be that same person that I said last time, that if the world had a catalytic problem, and I was one of the people who could save the world, that the earlier version of me, I would go anyway, you know, because I can't be with you, because I need to save the world. But now, I understand that, you know, being with the family will be more important, you know. Why did I share that story? I share the story because I feel that this heroism, it speaks a lot about the good things, but it doesn't talk about the bad things. You sacrifice a lot of things when you have that kind of mentality. But to say that it's not good is also an understatement, because heroes do exist. These are the people who grind themselves doing things that you don't even know, but is protecting something, whether it's the environment or people or, you know, soldiers. I mean, where do we lie in between, what is the redemption here, right? So what I learned out of this is, what is the purpose? Where is the source of this heroism? If it is really to show that, you know, you are a hero, that you want people's respect and validation, which I admit is me. It is me. I want to be that character in that manga or anime or that movie, right? And people are like, oh, wow, Chris is very useful, he did this, he did that. Then maybe I would say it's for the wrong reasons. And then you will make sacrifices or make certain decisions that would not have been right. So if that was my redemption back then, I am trying to change it. I say try because I still don't know who I am today. But it's a journey, right? So I want to change that to something that really means something for somebody without any reason to, say, show off. So that being said, I have to be very careful here, because I'm not saying no, that if you do something good, that you don't share it on social media. I feel that positivity is underrated. We have to share this. Testimony speaks, right? It's a snowball effect. The more you testify on good things, then the more people will be like, it's actually not normal to do good things, and I want to do it so that we can create a better world, right? As opposed to the other side. So I'm not saying no to that, but I'm just saying that the intent, search for the intent in your heart, just like how I did with mine. Why do I do this? I know that somewhere in my heart, there is a root, a source of intent that I do want to have, create a positive world. You know, if I can play a role in it, then I would want to. So I guess that's where I get my redemption from. Yeah.
What makes someone an inspirational icon? Many entrepreneurs can be successful, but fewer perhaps can acknowledge that, hey, there's something wrong with me, and to work through those issues with mental health professionals. So perhaps there's more to being an icon than just a long list of successes on your resume. Every one of us will fall, we will cry, and we will need support. This is Because Feelings Matter, a series featuring personal stories of people and their mental health issues. If you missed any part of the show, or if you'd like to listen to previous episodes, you can search for it on bfm.my or on our BFM app. You've been listening to Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.